Okay.
Seems like I finished just in time, or 4 minutes before schedule. Yeah. So, what is my interest? What do I do? I first studied to become a teacher and really received my first and second federal exam in mathematics and physics in Bavaria. Then I thought, maybe I just can't deal with pupils. I'd like to go back to university, do my PhD. And of course, if you come back to university and they know you're a teacher, what do? You teach the forthcoming teachers. Mm-hmm. So, designing problem sheets really is a big thing for me. That is an everyday task and it can be very, very tedious. And this is what I want to show you. And I for me started to develop some kind of unified workflow to prevent myself from falling into the typical errors, the typical mistypes, and typical things that just produce incongruencies and make errors persist in your PDFs. This is why I was, I also changed the title, because some people got a bit messed up. The original title was Many Versions, so this is not a talk about a subversion thing. When I'm considering versions, I'm considering the problem sheet, and the problem sheet including solutions and so on that are versions to me. And I want to produce them in one go. Really, I want to type PDF LaTeX, then my input file, and then go and have multiple PDFs. Some people on the internet claim that is not possible. It is, we'll need a little trick. So, this is not working because I didn't switch it off. What are the typical approaches to doing this problem sheets? First of all, this is the most stupid. I type my problems into one source document, then I start another one, types up the solutions. This has many disadvantages, despite not seeing what you're doing when you're typing the solutions. You have to maintain the congruence when you change the order of the problems. Normally, your creative process is like you think of problems that should go onto the sheet, and after you typeset them, you think, maybe I should change order, maybe the easy one first. And if you already changed typeset the solutions, you have to maintain that order there also. And then you have to copy and paste around with the solutions, and that may easily get messed up. So you have solutions two times, one at the start, but on the end, because you miss deleting them, that is just messes you up. Then you might change notation. This is very common when you try to reuse some problems. So you had the problem in your course 3 years ago, you want to use it again, but the lecturer actually uses a different notation. He doesn't type X subscript 0, he uses A. So you have to change this with a replace all, but since you have two documents, you have to do the replace all in two documents. Tedious. And the students will also be a bit naggy because they really want the model solutions to be delivered in PDF form. And if the problem is not rewritten above the solution, they will nag. There will be a lot of emails coming in. So we really want to have a version with problem followed directly by its solution. So then, the next approach with one of my colleagues uses, and I'm criticizing him a lot for this. He typesets the problem sheet, then copies the full file, and then inserts the solutions. This is also nasty, because now you get incongruencies. Yeah? So you realize there's an error, maybe just a typo, and you correct it in the sheet with the solutions, but you miss out on the problem sheet. So you have a fine solution sheet, but there's still the same typo as in the online version of the problem sheet, and that produces just another nag. So the nags don't stop, and even worse, we haven't fixed all the other disadvantages. There's just more problems. So this is really not what we want to do. So resort to typing everything in one sheet. This is the only way of keeping it sane. We don't want to have problems in, don't want to have the problem typeset in several documents, so we have to update each typesetting of it if we found one typo. So we have one document, so then we need something to switch so we can include or exclude our solutions, and that is done. If you think about Exim's class by Philip Hirschhorn, he does something like that. It is a well-established class that works, but still there's a problem. You have to pay close attention to what you are compiling, because using it like this, you have to know, is the switch on, is the switch off? Are the solutions in the PDF, aren't they? Maybe experiment with the job name, because both the version with or without the solutions will compile into the same job name, and you easily upload the sheet with all the solutions first, and so the students don't have any task, because the solutions are already given. So that is a big no-no, that must not happen. So I was looking for a workflow to prevent all of the errors mentioned here. What can we do? What do I want to require? I want to have one source document, no more. This was a natural way for the type setting the solution as mentioned in version number 3. And then I don't want to have any duplicate texts. I don't want to copy and paste around, unless for the obvious reasons. And this will provide me with the opportunity of having replace all function if I really need to alter notation. Then again, I have to think about reusing parts. I will give this course like every year, so I will take one or the other problem, reuse it. So I should allow for the use of include. Yeah. So what is my roadmap for this talk? First, I want to show an easy way to include and exclude solutions and a bit more, because I will already fall ahead, not only the solutions, because you know you have correctors, somebody's got to correct it, and you have to give them notes too. Then I want to produce all the versions I defined in just one go. There's a neat little trick I found on Stack Exchange. And of course I want to harness a little bit of the power of freeware math software. And this is what Uwe hinted at. I will provide an example of the sweeve. Also, the sweeve was a big pain in the ass this morning, and I will talk about that later, because I followed up on Herbert's demand to install TechLife by hand in Ubuntu, and that provided this one big problem, and I showed the way out I found like 10 minutes ago. Okay, first up, how do we include and exclude solutions? My use cases, I have the student who just, you should only get the problems, not more, because he has to do some work. The teachers, or the tutors, they need the solutions. And the guys who correct all the produced solutions, they need to get some notes on how to grade this, or what a solution will be accepted, what will not be acceptable. These are my use cases, and the solution I chose was the one with common style by Victor Eickhout, and this was pointed out to me by Wolf Nipaschk. This was a really, really helpful comment, because common style really takes provides all the functions you need, and I will give you the full manual of common style now, which fits one slide. Ha! Common style provides just two commands. This is include comment. I chose the word foobar here. This will just define the environment of called foobar and say whatever is between begin foobar and end foobar, include it. Same with exclude comment. Exclude comment foobar will define the environment, otherwise you would get some error messages. And also, what's between begin foobar and end foobar would just be excluded. That will not go into the output. So this is just what we want. Exchange foobar for solutions, and then we have a switch to include or exclude the solutions. Yeah. A little minimal working example. So we want to include wisdom, exclude nonsense. And of course, this will provide, if you should say, and who chases two rabbits catches none, which is a slight metaphor of what the other first approaches were. Yeah, yeah, may I interrupt you?
Yeah, man die Schachteln? Can you put them in one and another?
Ah, you mean like you want to have some nonsense and then some wisdom in the nonsense?
Well, sometimes there is.
Oh, the other way around.
Maybe what I mean is if you have a larger document with exercises on geometry, exercises on arithmetics, you can say include geometry, which includes the wisdom and nonsense, and include or exclude arithmetics. So it depends.
Okay, okay. Well, I haven't thought about that, I just went the easy way here. Okay. So, in all of the use cases we defined, we want to include the problems, but I kept this here just to have the principle. Then the student gets solutions and the how to grade information excluded. The teacher gets the inclusion of the solutions. And the corrector gets everything. So I thought, yeah, where do I put this to make it really usable? Of course, I got to start my own class file. And if you've never seen a class file from its body, this looks a bit confusing, but it's really not. This is the average command. It tells you you want to use LaTeX2E. This says we are providing UniFlow, which is the name for my class, and if I say this, I just don't have to think about naming it uniflow.cls. I can give it any other file name. It will still be uniflow. Then we require the package comment. This is what we need. And we also say, in any case, include the problems. Then we define our three options to the class. So we can go document class. What do you call it? Kiki Klammern.
Square brackets,
a student, and then curly brackets, UniFlow, and you will have exactly what is written here. And in case no version is defined, we'll have the default as the corrector, so you can view anything you typed, which is normal when developing the problem sheet. We want also. I like to use the article class that looks more natural for me. It's the kind of old style view. And any option I didn't define, I just pass it on to article. So maybe I want to have A4 paper, or I want to define 12PT or something. That all goes passed on to article. So this is my simple class, and that does the trick for switching. So I can include, exclude solution. That task is done. Next up. How do I produce all the versions? Quick brainstorming, what can we do? Oh, we could write a shell script. Not really my approach, because you need some kind of extra file, and then you have to think about shell wildcards to make it usable with more documents. You could also use a make file, which I've never done in my life.
Oh, easy.
Yeah, everything's easy once learned, as per Kronecker.
Or use rubber or LaTeX MK.
We could also define pseudo executables, or something with Lua. And I wanted to keep this talk basic, I wanted to keep it for teachers. And so I wanted really to restrict myself to PDF LaTeX and not put any Lua into there, regardless of all the advantages it might have. So why didn't I take the other ways? It requires some extra file, and I just wanted to have my tech source file containing all the information about the extra compiling, and none extra file. And of course, yeah, you can get the file contents environment and put your shell script into the tech source, but that's not what I wanted to do. But gonna do something similar to that. Yes, also, I don't want to require some non-tech programs which have to be installed. Make is packaged for Linux, and in Windows, I don't know, there is a Windows Make, but still, then you have to install it and whatnot.
There's GNU Make for Windows.
Yeah, but it's not, it doesn't come with the standard installation. So, you may ask Herbert about installing programs and how people deal with that.
There's no tech in the standard installation.
Okay.
Yeah, but that they somehow manage, or they go to Herbert. I wanted to aim for platform independence. So the shell script is really a problem then, though you have the switch if Windows. Yeah, so you could do that, but then again, nah. And I don't want to require beyond tech knowledge. So having a little bit of extra commands would be okay, but they should all be tech. So how does that work? There's a neat trick called escaping to the shell with write 18. So maybe you know with write you can switch through different write channels, and 18 corresponds to a shell. So this would be a simple hello world example. And so pdflatig could call to itself. We can call pdflatig from pdflatig, a little recursion. And that's what I'm going to do. And a little warning here, of course, write 18 is not enabled by default, because then some nasty guy will just send you over a text file to hack your computer. And so you have to use a command line switch to shell escape. Otherwise, the document will just not compile. Yeah, there will be an error message, and this is a very sane thing, but also you can enable it by default in your favorite tech editor, and then you get a file from me, and then your machine is broke. So, to call pdflatig from pdflatig and switch some options, we have to rethink command line calls. Your natural call would be pdflatig and then your source document. We can alter this and say we go to the classical version, as someone pointed out to me in the last conference. You can just start pdflatig, enter, and then type every single character. This is possible, and this is about what this does. So we start our own little new document here, which just consists of the part input this file. So we have an opportunity to get some more code in here, some preceding code, and this is actually what we want to do to switch the version. I do this by a global definition. I take my condition macro. This is just to indicate what condition we have now. And I just set it to a little piece of text, a string, the string student. So this is how I want to switch to the student version. Not altering at all the sheet, because this command, the whole command put into write 18 command, goes into this document, so it calls in itself from there. It's a mindfuck on the first version. So let's ease into that slowly. Yeah, we have to adapt our little class to react to this condition macro. We have set the options, but we do not alter the class options. And really, I wanted to supersede them, because of course we could put here a little load class and pass on an option to that, but we might have an option clash then, and this will not result in anything useful. So I wanted to have condition macro, and when condition macro is given, when it is defined, all other options should just switch off. So whatever you typeset before, if condition macro is given, we do what condition macro says. What did I do? Yeah. This is the neat trick I found in Stack Exchange, and I will give the credits to Ulrike Fischer. I guess she posted first, and then there were a lot of tiny alterations. And this looks frightening to anyone who hasn't read the tech book. It is a mindfuck. So, what happens here? If X means we look not at the commands as they're written there, but what they expand to, the definitions. And we're interested in the macro, condition macro. Is it defined or is it undefined? If it is not defined, we will look what's in the conditional block here, in the F block. And if it is defined, the whole block will just get ignored. Straightforward. So, what does immediate mean? Immediate mean when the parser, when tech reaches this position, we do not wait, we'll execute it immediately, otherwise this will stay there and tech will see, maybe will I parse it, will I not, will this be useful, can I do some substitutions in here? No. When we arrive at this point, we do exactly what's written in here, straight on. Then why do I need this expand after? Does anyone realize why there's an expand after here?
Because it's tech.
Because it's tech, no. I heard someone had a solution over there.
Yeah, you have to power up fine.
Yeah, otherwise you would just won't find it. When you hit the stop, tech stops. No further document reading, and then the if block will not be closed. We want to reach that, so we need to expand after. And also, I may remind you, the command expand after has its 25th birthday this year for the eponymous publication of Alois Kabelschacht. And you know Alois Kabelschacht is really Peter Breitenlohner hiding his true name not to get beef with the physicist society. So, let's look at it again. What does this little piece of code do? We first start this whole thing with the shell escape and read the document. And this, on the first go, will just do whatever the if block says and then stop. So far, no output. Because really, in here, there's nothing to be put in an output document except for what happens on the shell. So what does this command trigger here? Write 18 has been called. This actually produces output, namely everything below that, because now that condition macro was defined, this if block is plainly ignored. So we can go on to doing whatever was down there with option set student. So this is just what we want. And of course, thinking along, we can have another immediate here for a second version, a third immediate for a third version. We just have to pay close attention to the job name. They must not compile to the same file, otherwise we will just overwrite everything we just done. So I chose to alter the job name to job name dash my option, which will then not output anything like sheet01.pdf, but sheet01 dash student.pdf dash solution dash teacher.pdf and so on. That is neat. And we're gonna try this now. I hope this works. By the way, all the example documents will go onto the file server right after the talk, so if you want to try this, let's see. Get all this. This is the first task. We just have a problem and a solution. And just to show that this always works, neither what we include or exclude, we'll have some testing text here. Okay. There is no option defined right here. So what did it do? We had the default set to the corrector version, so all the environments should show up. Let's check this. So did it produce output? It did. And what do we see? Yeah, all three lines are there, just what we wanted. Next up, we just want to have the student version, which means the solution shouldn't go into there. Did I save that?
No, you made an error. That's a dot.
No, no.
Would you increase the font size?
Of course.
Please.
that here. Is enough, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
Much better.
Okay. So we set the class option student for our little class Uniflow, and let's see if that works. Ocular updated automatically, and we see the solution is gone. That works. So we want to do this batch thing, and I included this in the class file actually. So we will open the class file now. This will really be big one now. There it is. Yeah, that's the current state of my class document, and I added some things. So I have to distinguish, am I on the first call, or did pdf-latex call itself again? Am I in the second order call? So I defined a simple if statement, am I on the first order call, and this is by default true. And then I declared this little option batch here. This is when I want to have all three versions produced. And is correct? Yeah. So we have our ifx block here. The first version that will be produced is the corrector. And this doesn't alter the job name because I'm using TechMaker. So you have to produce some output that has the normal job name. Otherwise, there will nothing to be shown in the output viewer, and that will result in a nasty window telling me there was no output and I don't like this. Then we produce the student version and attach student to the file name, the job name, and also the teacher version x part after sub file. Okay, so far we have not reacted to the condition macro. But we have to, otherwise this will not alter anything. This will just produce corrector three times. That is not what I want. And that's why I modified the class options slightly. If I'm on the first run, these will be accepted. If I'm on the second order run, they will all be set to do nothing. And why does that make sense? This is down 30 here. Yeah. This is the block that reacts to the condition macro. So if the condition macro is not set, which means we're on a first order call, we didn't think about doing the batch thing at all, then we just execute our default option corrector. But if the condition macro is set, which means we must be on a second order call, we will execute the option, whatever condition macro says, and then not allow for any other class options to be executed, which means any other class options that I defined, not the ones that, for example, article will understand. So A4 paper will get passed on to article class, but when condition macro is set to student, then teacher and corrector will be set to do nothing after this call. And this works just fine. So I can sabotage myself by writing batch, student, teacher, and whatever into the class options. This is, it just prevents the option clash. Let's see if this works. Back to our minimum working example. We exchange this for batch, and maybe also include a little environment about how to grade to see that this really works. Begin. One or none, that is the easiest way to grade.
Techmec. I hate it. Now let's see what happens if I don't use the shell escape, which is a usual mistake. Nothing. In comes the shell escape. And aha! There we have our little output. First, what happened to test.pdf? You remember I set this to be the version to include everything, the corrector version. And we already opened that one, so here it is. And really, it contains all four lines. Let's have a look at the other versions. The student version. Yeah, just a problem, no solution, no how to grade. And did it also work for the teacher? Yeah, solution is there, but the one or none did not make it into, so this really works. Let's try to sabotage ourselves a little bit. Let's say student after that. Does that make any change? I'll save it. Back to the prompt. Shell escape is in. And go. Maybe I should delete the PDF files first to see if that really does it. Okay, documents get produced. Do they have the correct output? Yeah. So I don't know about these error messages. I'll develop it further, but you see, it just works fine. So everything I did there must have been somehow correct. So revisit it again. What did I do? I added this batch block with everything I want to do with the immediate write a toolkit. Then I modified my options to not react if I'm on a second order call. And then I had this little extra block to react to the condition macro and set the first order call to false. Okay, questions so far? Not.
You used the article class instead of some coma class. Does this have any meaning, or is it just
We're quite old-fashioned.
Okay.
We like the old computer modern and everything, you know. And also
paper format.
Yeah.
Bitmap
format. Yeah, well, there was this huge change in everything in 10 years ago when the internet came, so more you can't expect the math department to be more advanced, you know. We use a typesetting program developed somewhere in the 80s, and for me it was that we're now using a concurrent version of TechLife and not the one that came with the packaging.
You finally disbanded TechLife?
Well, it is still available on the system.
Oh.
Yeah, and we also have the central IT has TechLife 2010, but you know, I can work that way.
Which university is it, so we can avoid it?
TUM, Technical University of Munich. Yeah, well.
But do you still use open networks, or do you?
Come on, don't do that.
I actually have this talk in all the slides, really, to slide it off now. Sure, I have to use it because I work with teachers, but that is going on a tangent now. Think of this, I like the old school, old style fonts, the old style look, and this is what I can
persuade my boss to, and Coma, nah, we don't do this, at least not for the problem sheets. But you can have some pretty nasty problem sheets from our department using the Times class. Was that a question?
Yeah, because if you talk about education, there's also this shift to, let's say, these big boards, right? They can write on the screen for mathematics. That's what actually happens in the Netherlands, yeah? That they project more on the screen. You still have to type it.
Yeah, but then you use the Beamer class, don't you?
No, they use big whiteboards that you can write on, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, so if you, but that is for handwriting, isn't it?
Also, yeah, but also for simulation thing.
Yeah.
Kind of.
I can tell you a lot about it if you're interested in the email. It's
yeah.
Much more complicated than you think.
I
should not begin to talk about it right now, but it's really an interesting topic. I'm in the middle of it right now.
I just did that relate anyhow to my choice of the article class, or was it a general question?
More in general,
sure.
More in general, if you say you were being a bit conservative in some area, that
yeah.
Could also mean that maybe you stick to paper while everything is moving to.
I'll give the short answer to that. That just depends on the age of the professor. Yeah, if you're 7 years pre to your pensioning age, you will not shift your workflow. You know, my boss has learned to use a C-shell and that's it. No, that he did 20 years ago, now no change in workflow for the last 10 years. Okay, this was the part about switching. So we had the switching, we had to producing multiple outputs in one go, and then special for me, because everything I told you until yet is applicable to any kind of science. This is not math, you can use it in sociology, in psychology, in biology, if they have problem sheets, I don't know, but that is usable, and of course if they know LaTeX. I like to harness the power of freeware math software. And I will not get into that too much, what it does. I will just show you some examples. So, I will also not pursue to adapt the Uniflow class. This is just to make it easier for you to follow, because you've seen what I've done to have this batch option, and then already messed up the code, so it was not really suitable for a presentation. So we will not follow up on this. We'll have this write 18 trick, but directly in the document and no extra classes. Then yeah, we will focus on this trick, and I will give you the straight references to the Technische Komödie, and also in the version that goes into the file server, I will have the online link to the Technische Komödie, because that is already online. Everything I'll show. Okay. If you can't understand the math, just feel it. Yeah, there's no real use in understanding the problems I show. It's just to show that it works. And this section is quite Linux only, so get used to it. The software really works better, and in parts only works on Linux. So Windows is not a suitable thing if you want to harness this power. First up, Sage. Whom of you knows about Sage? Please raise your hand. Oh,
Sage. That you mean the old computer built in the States, multi-processing unit?
No. It's actually it's a concurrent program. So if you're a little bit into math software, this is forking from the computer algebra system Maxima, including the group theory software GAP, and then approximately every freeware computer algebra software has a part in this. Also, the statistics software R is included in part. Well, not with the packages, but the substantial things are available in Sage 2. And this is developed primarily for Ubuntu. If you want to have it for Windows, sure you can have it, but it will be a virtual box containing Ubuntu. So there will not be any possibility. Reinhard, may I interrupt you? There will not be any possibility to interact with a Windows-based TechLive and this Ubuntu in the virtual box. So if you really want to do that, maybe you just want to install the TechLive in this virtual box, or maybe there's a TechLive, a package TechLive in that virtual box, I don't know. But really, this is not a thing to use in Windows. Somehow you have to be in the Linux world, and Ubuntu will be the best choice. SageTech is not a part of TechLive or the CTAN, and that is for a reason. The SageTech is altered in every version of Sage. So to get really quality outputs and not produce a lot of warnings or error messages, you really have to update your SageTech sty with every new installation of Sage. There is a subdirectory containing that style file, and you are sync it over, and then it's just fine. Yeah. Compiling. First, you run pdf-latex, which will produce a file with the same job name ended by sagetech.sage. This is quite new. So this part you will not see in some comments on Stack Exchange, because this was altered switching to SageTech 5.2 or something. They introduced this another thing, because people used to have the job name followed by Sage for the things they programmed by hand, so the output of SageTech should go to something else, not to mess up the data they already had. This is a new thing, and this is the future. So if you want to use it, remember that there's SageTech.sage. And then you run Sage on that, and this will produce an output that is then taken into the compiling of PDF LaTeX, and I will show you precisely what happens. So, switch to the Sage example. Oh, too many open windows. There it is. Sage. First of all, what's in the file, what's in the code? Yeah. So, first up, commented out, is our write 18 trick. We will not use this in the first demonstration, so I may just scroll over this. And this is what happens. Basic document, now for you with the comma script. And the div 16, because we don't want to focus about borders, but about content. We use the SageTech package, which is the only package we need at the moment. And this is a neat little thing. We define a matrix in silence. And also these vectors, which will not be used, I might just delete them. So there's just a matrix definition. This you can look up in the documentation of Sage, so I will not go into this, you will see the output. And to show you the matrix, I have this line, I am talking about the matrix. This is display math, and then we make a call to the Sage command, which says, give me the output of Sage for the command A. So this will show the matrix. And then to show you, this will do. Yeah, that's all of the document. I will show you the powerful thing. If you know about matrices, the nasty thing is inverting them. So inverting a matrix is a pretty tedious computation. And if you do it by hand, it will all go wrong. Not in the 2x2 case, but in the case you want to have in a problem sheet, really to stress the students, to make them learn the technique, which will be a 4x4 case, that will take like 10 minutes to do it by hand. And if the computer can do it, and also can do it in the case you have a last minute change in matrix, because you realized, oh, the total exercise will not pan out if I don't alter the matrix, especially if the matrix is not invertible at first. So this will adjust itself, we have a self-correction, PDF LaTeX will do the calculation for us, and this is just fine.
So, on the first go, we will go through all the computation steps I showed you. Revisit this. First, call pdf-latex, then call to Sage for the Sage file, then pdf-latex again. PDF. So, there I am, pdf-latex. Okay, here we have the new output, the Sage file, and the usual crap from pdf-latex. And why is there an error message? Okay, I have... So this worked 15 minutes ago. And thank you. This is, yeah. Ah, marvelous.
Many dollars. Expensive.
So, this has already produced an output. Let's see what the output did. Do we get an output? Yeah, that is a fine little output. A is So this means we didn't do the Sage thing. So we will do this now and just make sure it didn't lock the output. Yeah, there's a Acrobat here. Don't want this. How do I close this Acro-read? Okay, let's call for Sage, sagetech.sage, and this will take quite a lot of time for compilation, which we can accept because it's a very tedious task if we did it by hand, and it produces this Python file. So this will take most of the time because it produces the Python file, then runs the Python file, and we're still not finished. Yep. So it produced the S command and the S out, also preceded by sagetech to prevent other files from being overwritten. And now all the things we want to have are provided in these auxiliary files. And if we call to pdf-latex again, let's see what it has done. Isn't that just perfect? The matrix is provided and its inverse is there. And if we want to reuse this problem in the next year's class, we certainly will not use the same matrix, but we can alter the digits. And pdf-latex will care about recalculating the inverse matrix, so this saves a lot of time. Also, if you have students that say we need some little extra training, just take this, alter some digits, run it for pdf-latex, it will work. But please, do not reset your computer or install a new file system or Linux, because you have to then to recheck that sagetech is working and Sage is installed, and that was the problem I had this morning. So, this will work if you don't mess with your computer. Okay. Then we go to the second order. We saw that Sage is working, but does it also work if we want to implement our little tricky here? So we comment this in, and then everything should go by itself. The first call sets condition macro to 1, where 1 has no particular meaning, it just makes the condition macro being defined. That's all we need to just skip the if block. And then we input the job name, and then after that, we run Sage on the Sage tech dot Sage of the job name, and then just PDF LaTeX again, and then stop. So everything we wanted, but now in just one call, and to show you that I'm not fooling you, I will delete anything else but the source document. Yeah, didn't mess up. Really, there's nothing there but this. I will prove it with DLS. Yes. So PDF LaTeX. Don't forget about the shell escape. O4 and go. First step down. Ah, there comes the Python file. So we're in Sage now. No pages of output. This is correct, by the way, because this relates to our first order call, which will not produce an output, but just run the batch file. So no pages of output is our standard answer, but still, there's a PDF. And let's see, this should be the same as before. Perfect. But now, with just one call. So this is just what I wanted, very slick, and if I want to use this problem and solution and how to grade thing now, I can do this, you can do it as a little homework. Because I'm going to show you another little thing, and this is... that was a bad idea. Now we will come back to Uwe, and Uwe's talk about the sweeve, which is really S-weave, statistics weaved into it. There was once this freeware project S, and then they made it into SPSS, which is the commercial standard for scientific research in... Sorry, I messed it up. So S plus, the plus came to it, and then it went commercial. And R is the freeway alternative. And of course, if you're a university, you put all the money into your valuable workers and not into the valuable software. Where was I? Eurotech. Here. Examples, sweep. With Sweave, you have a slightly altered workflow, because I actually got this on my presentation, I forgot. Yeah. This uses a special markup called the NoWeb. This is why the files have the extension R, no web, R, N, W. And this no web really messes me up. You will see in a minute why it does. It does not follow the standard logic we know from begin and end. There's a crazy beginning and ending of environments. And also, there will be a little pitfall, because if we want to try Ulrike's trick, we now have to call PDF LaTeX on an RNW ended file, which does not match bash autocompletion. So the tab will get us into the wrong direction, and we have to be very careful with this. So, setting yourself up for failure. How is R called to? Well, namely, how is Sweave called to? Sweave is the one weaving R into LaTeX. So first, we have this R with the command sweave run on our sweave example.rnw, which parses the document, looks for all the NoWeb blocks, exchanges them for what R would do, and then produces a tech file. This is a quite funny tech file, but this is really more readable. And then we just run PDF LaTeX on that, and it's ready. So how does my example look? There it is. We skip our block at first. Just look at the example.
my example here is, I'll do a little funny plot with this, not your normal plot of a graph, but a rank sum plot. So this is quite a big statistical thing, and I said if you don't understand math, just enjoy it, it will be very nice. This here is our little no-web block. This pointed brackets, or how do you call them, they open up the block where you can enter your options. So in the midst of this, this is where the options go, if you want to provide options. So we have done this down here. There's the options, fig equals true and echo equals false, because we don't want to see what the output of R is. We really want to see just a plot. And here's the call to our function. I'm selecting a standard database, because it's not about the database, it's really about the plot. So I take the standard database for showing examples, which is air quality, and run a little statistical test on this, which will produce a nice output. And the plot is generated further below with the second no-web block, which is just giving us the box plot. Yeah. And here again, LaTeX will handle any changes in the database after compiling. First way by hand, we learned R command sweep. On the RNW file and go. Yeah, this is very fast and it produced our tech file. So we hit PDF LaTeX on this. And here bash completion does what we want, because we're not using Ulrike's trick now, by now. So we have two PDF outputs. Why do we have two? Well, let's have a look at the one we didn't expect, ended by -002. And if you're using PS4 PDF, you can guess what's in here. That is just our nice box plot, but generated externally, will be included with an include graphics. And how does the output look? Just nice, just nice. So here, echo was true. So we get whatever R told us it is doing. We entered the command, we got the answer. Then here are some more answers. And then we got the plot without the echo. And this is really nice. And updates with every rerun of R command sweep and then PDF LaTeX. So this really, really takes a lot of recompiling, redoing the graphics. Think of it like doing it by hand, which means you update your database, then you enter R, then you do your plot, then you copy it over to your tech directory as an image, then you include it. That is the usual approach. That is a long way. And here, everything is in one go. Well, not quite. We will have to use Ulrike's trick. But before we do this, we actually have a look at what this sweep does. Where is it? Yeah. So what happened to our no-web block? Our no-web block is now something looking like a chunk, which is a sweep chunk, and a sweep input. These are just environments setting up the font. So really, our calls were replaced by, it's not a neatly formatted output, but it is an output in a typewriter font. And these are our usual environments in tech. And then, how does the plot come in? Yeah. Just what we expected, include graphics, and then our version -002. And to round up my talk, I will demonstrate that this really also fits in quite nicely with Ulrike's trick.
Just be sure not to delete the source. Then we have to think about commenting in our nice block. So there it is. What does it do? Call R command three on the job name dot rnw, which will produce the job name dot tech. And that is our usual call to PDF LaTeX. We don't need to alter the job name. That has worked fine up until now, so we don't do it with the little trick. And then off to the shell.
Yeah.
PDF LaTeX dash dash shell dash escape. And that is where the problem with the bash autocompletion comes into play. If I now type sweep and hit the tab, there's just nothing happening here. I will not get this. So either you're a geek and you know how to switch off autocompletion, or you just type it by hand as in the old days. So this is a little drawback that we can accept. And there is a PDF. Does it look like before? Yes, it does. Hence the beauty of all my unified workflow, and thank you for listening.